He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
I mean,
she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you as we are now 48 hours away from Roger Goodell walking across that stage in Detroit and putting the Chicago Bears on the clock to start the 2024 NFL Draft. The Jaguars have the 17th pick in round number one, 8 picks in total over the 3 days as it stands right now. And there's a lot of information, a lot of stuff going on between the NFL, some rumors, some scuttlebutt, and we'll dive into all of it over the next 2 hours here on Hacker After Dark. Guest lineup looks like this. Less than 20 minutes away, Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Justin's one of my favorites when it comes to talking draft. He has a very interesting perspective because Justin, over the last calendar year, has interviewed over 200 draft prospects that hope their name is called over this 3-day window in Detroit. 200 interviews Justin has done for the Draft Network. And yes, that includes one-on-ones with Quinyon Mitchell, with Terrion Arnold, with, you name it, Brian Thomas, all the guys that have been linked to Jacksonville. Justin has talked to all of them, one-on-one interviews for the Draft Network. So he has an interesting perspective of these guys and based on what Jacksonville needs and his thoughts. We will talk about all of that with Justin Mello of the Draft Network. That comes up in less than 20 minutes. Also, my buddy Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 will stop by towards the top of the 9 o'clock hour. As we talked about last night, 3 positions of need for the Jaguars. Last night was all about cornerback. And if I were a betting man, I would say the betting favorite right now is corner in round number 1. The other two, offensive tackle, which we'll dive into tomorrow night, and wide receiver, which we will dive into this evening in just a moment to have an in-depth talk about wide receiver potentially at number 17. Quickly, Denmark, before we get to the big deal of the night, I won't go as far as to say my nerves are shot a little bit, but no more than 40 minutes ago, 45 minutes ago, I'm minding my own business in Mandarin, stopping to get gas on San Jose Boulevard, and I hear this blaring car alarm, and I'm just naive to the fact that it possibly could be my car, because my car's alarm has just never gone off for no reason. I'm thinking it's the dude next to me. So I fill up the gas tank, ready to go, ready to come on in, get in my car, and I figure out very quickly, my alarm is going off for absolutely no reason whatsoever. I don't know why. I've Googled why. But that's a pretty nerve-wracking situation when you have a bunch of people at a gas station staring at you because your car is just going bonkers with the alarm. And I didn't realize, Denmark, I don't know if you know how to do this. Just how do you shut that thing up? How do you turn it off? So I'm pressing every button known to man on my keychain. And finally, I hit one that silenced it. But my goodness, man, for about 3 or 4 minutes, that thing would not shut up. Have no idea why it would just go off by itself. That might be a separate issue that I need to get addressed. But have you ever been in a public setting in a situation like that where people are staring at you and you have no idea how to get the thing to be quiet?
No, it's probably had it once in a parking lot, but I know like I accidentally hit the car alarm button and then I hit the unlock button and then it stops right away. It happens a couple of times when I'm at the house, but never in a public setting like that.
2000, now it's an old car, right? I'm probably in the market for a new vehicle. If any establishments are listening, you can always contact the sales department here at 1010XL and 92.5 FM. We'd love to talk with you. So I am probably in the market for a new automobile, but good grief, man. That thing was just blaring in the parking lot. People were looking at me, and I'm just like, oh, get me out of here. And finally, luckily, I hit a button to shut it up. So I'm happy. The car has shut up, but I'm not going to shut up. I'm with you till 10 o'clock, and we're glad you're with us. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
All right. If cornerback is the betting favorite for where the Jaguars are going to go on Thursday night in round number one, and I believe corner is the betting favorite, I would say second place is wide receiver. Some of you desperately believe the Jaguars need a wide receiver, and not only need to get one, but need to trade up to get one. I'm of the opinion they need to draft a wide receiver at some point in rounds one, two, or three, but not necessarily in round number one. When healthy, and again, that's a big if slash when healthy, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and Gabe Davis isn't half bad. The last year, all three of those guys were fully healthy. You're talking 80 catches for Zay, 80-plus catches for Christian, and Gabe Davis hasn't been fully healthy in a couple of years, but even despite an injury last year, he still caught 48 balls. That is a combined 210 catches for those three, their last relatively healthy seasons in the National Football League. Sprinkle in there about 18 touchdowns as well in their last relatively healthy seasons. I think they're okay at wide receiver. Are they good? No. Are they bad? No. I think they're okay. I think they need to address it, but I don't necessarily know if they need to address it in round one. But some of you believe that, so let's get into it. And Brian Thomas is the name we all hear. Brian Thomas out of LSU is the name everybody is talking about. Marvin Harrison Jr. will be gone. Malik Nabers will be gone. Roma Duse will be gone. A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, 17's probably too high. So it looks like Brian Thomas, if you stick at 17, that's going to be your guy at wide receiver. He does give the Jaguars probably something they don't have right now. He's not a Christian Kirk or a Zay Jones. He's a speedster. He's a bona fide deep threat, probably more so than Gabe Davis. He would be the Calvin Ridley replacement, if you will. But do you spend 17 overall, round one, on a wide receiver? You still need to protect Trevor Lawrence. You still need to affect the opposing quarterback. You still need to stop other quarterbacks, including C.J. Stroud. I just don't know if wide receiver is as pressing as some, not all, but some of you believe it is. Again, I think you draft one in one of the first three rounds. I don't necessarily know if you have to draft a wide receiver 17th overall. Would I like to have Brian Thomas? Sure. I would not be against that. Trading up for a Malik Nabers depends what the cost is. It would be massive. It would probably cost you 17. It would probably cost you 48. It would probably cost you a first next year. Now there's the Brandon Ayuk rumors that won't seem to go away. As we get close to the draft, those are heating back up. Not necessarily Jacksonville, but Brandon Ayuk being shopped by the 49ers. That's a separate issue. We're talking about drafting a wide receiver. Denmark, let me ask you, number 17 for Brandon Ayuk, would you do it?
I say no, but I just, because you know you got to pay him big money.
You do. I would think long and hard about that. The Brandon Ayuk thing to me is vastly different than drafting somebody. Drafting somebody, they will need time to develop. Drafting somebody, you hope they turn into a good player. Whereas Brandon Ayuk is developed. Brandon Ayuk is a good player. And Brandon Ayuk would come in here and be the best player on your offense outside of Trevor Lawrence. So that to me is a far different situation. I would be much more inclined to listen to you about spending number 17 on Brandon Ayuk as opposed to spending 17 on Brian Thomas or another wide receiver. Cornerback to me again, number one need, head and shoulders. I put wide receiver at two because I do believe there is a need there. But truthfully, if you give me the option of Brian Thomas or Jared Verse on Thursday night, I would take Jared Verse. If you give me the option of Brian Thomas or Troy Fontanu, right, from Washington, boy, that's one I would have to think long and hard about as well. You probably have a bigger need at wide receiver than you do on the offensive line. But again, it's all about protecting Trevor. It's all about protecting your franchise. Cam Robinson and Walker Little are free agents after 2024. Fontana would probably be an upgrade over both anyway. Now, are they going to draft one? Back to the original question. I believe if Quinyon Mitchell is on the board, he's going to be the pick for the Jaguars. I believe if Quinyon Mitchell is gone and Terrion Arnold is on the board, he will be the pick for the Jaguars. If both Mitchell and Arnold are gone, which I don't believe they will be, but if they are both gone, and Jared Verse is there, you guys know how I feel about that. I might take Verse over both of those corners anyway. Brian Thomas, to me, would probably come in number four or number five. I probably have him behind both corners. I have him behind Jared Verse. And I might have him behind Fontana, the offensive lineman out of Washington. Denmark, wide receiver, 17. Do you draft Brian Thomas?
No.
So you're like me. You're kind of against that?
Yeah, the value is too good in the second round. The drop-off after the first three receivers, the difference between the fourth receiver, which is probably Brian Thomas, and the eighth, ninth receiver is not that much of a difference.
But here's the one, and I don't disagree with you, and I've brought that up to many people. Here's the response I get, and it's a fair one. Brian Thomas is the fourth best receiver. Ricky Pearsall might be the eighth best receiver, right?
Sure.
Different players.
That's correct.
Brian Thomas is 6'3", runs a 4'3". Ricky Pearsall is Christian Kirk.
So
you
got to
take that into account.
That's true, but so much of a receiver has to do with who your offensive coach is and how good your quarterback is. If those two guys are good, your receiver can play well. If you're a receiver and you're going to a bad situation, it's not going to be well. So I trust Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence in the offense to bring in a guy, if you draft a receiver in the second round, to perform well.
Yeah. Look, and I've said this a bunch of times, and I'll continue to say it leading up to Thursday night. I believe Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, in whatever order you want to put them in, that is a stronger room than Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, and Darnell Savage. Tyson Campbell's a good player. Ronald Darby was a good player last year, but he's got a lot of injuries, and he's 30. He's a Band-Aid. Let's be realistic here. He's a stopgap. Darnell Savage has been a safety a majority of his career. They think he can play nickel, but they're not positive, right? They don't know. After that, it's Monterick Brown and Gregory Jr. So there is a need at corner. I've come around full circle. I like to get Trevor Lawrence weapons, and I like to surround him with good skill position players. That's why I say I want to take a wide receiver in either round two or round three. I think you have to in either round two or round three. But I've changed my tone. I think the cornerback room is very underwhelming, certainly behind Campbell, Darby, and Savage. And if all of a sudden you add Quinyon Mitchell to that or Terrion Arnold to that, and we're in here on Friday talking about Tyson Campbell, Quinyon Mitchell, Ronald Darby, and Darnell Savage, well then wait a minute. That is a far different conversation. And if you combine that with a Xavier Legette or a Ricky Pearsall, whomever in round two, to go with Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk and Zay Jones, well, now we're talking. So I like wide receiver in the first three rounds. I don't necessarily like wide receiver at 17 overall, which to me means I'm going to sacrifice Brian Thomas, and I'm okay with that, assuming either Quinyon Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, or Jared Verse are on the board at 17. 641-1010 on the phone line and on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Your phone calls, your texts, welcome. I'll tell you what we'll do. Right out of the gate, before we get to Justin Mello of the Draft Network, again, 200-plus interviews of draft prospects Justin has done on that website over the last few months. He's talked to them all, man, one-on-one interviews. He's got a very interesting perspective on those players and what he thinks the Jaguars will do in the draft. Before we get there, boy, it's going to be on tomorrow night at Daly's Place. AEW Dynamite coming off a terrific pay-per-view where they crowned a new world champion. All the stars from Tony Khan's promotion, All Elite Wrestling, will be home in Daly's Place tomorrow night, AEW Dynamite. If you want to go, be caller number 4 right now to 641-1010, and Dylan Denmark will hook you up with a pair of tickets for AEW, our friends at All Elite Wrestling, Dynamite, their signature program, tomorrow night right here in Jacksonville at Daly's Place. Caller 4 right now. Talking draft, talking Jaguars. Justin Mello of the Draft Network next on a Monday night edition. Check that, a Tuesday called an audible. Tuesday night edition, ladies and gentlemen, of Hacker After Dark.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Thursday night, the NFL draft up in Detroit. The Jaguars own the 17th pick in round number 1. They have 8 picks in total, including 5 in the top 116. What are they going to do? What should they do? For that, let's go to Justin Mello of the Draft Network. He does a great job covering the NFL draft, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Justin, how you doing?
Doing well, Ryan, man. Appreciate you for having me on here as we're at the finish line of the 2024 NFL draft. Finally, you know, I say every year this process is too long. It leads to a lot of, speculation that's not really there. So excited to be going into Thursday finally.
You know, for a guy like you, we've started following the draft probably since January, really, and intently. You've been doing it now for probably a calendar year. I'm sure when last year wrapped up, the week after the 23 draft, you had already turned the page to the 24 draft. So for a guy like you and your colleagues at the Draft Network, what is this week like?
Well, I think the best thing I can say is it feels like the culmination of a year's hard work. It's exactly what you said, right? We especially our scouts, our in-house scouting team, we've got some fantastic people on staff. You know, our scouting director won a national championship at LSU with that undefeated team from a few years ago. That's Keith Sanchez. So for us, it's all about turning the page. The work starts in the early summer, fall, as you said. We start putting together lists and predetermined scouting reports done. The first ones, at least the first version of scouting reports based on tape from this past season, the 2023 season, that is. And of course, tinkering and altering it as we get our hands on the 2024 college football season tape. So it really, at the end, it feels like the culmination of a year's hard work. We're all very, very proud of the work that we've put in over the last year. It's our busiest weekend of the year. We got to still make sure we execute all our assignments, but at the end of it, we're confident we'll be able to pat ourselves on the back and say it was a job well done.
All right, Justin, let's get into it. The Jaguars, after free agency, all indications are corner, wide receiver, probably their two biggest needs. I think offensive tackle, possibly in play. I got a caveat for you that I'll ask you about in a moment. But let's begin at corner at 17. Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, what are the odds that one or both of those guys are on the board at 17 on Thursday night?
Well, I like that question because the way that I feel right now is that there's a really good chance one of them will be on the board, not so good of a chance that both of them will be on the board. I do think one will be there for Jacksonville at 17. But when I look at this order, they're sort of that, you know, that 12, 13, 14, like that rough, like Denver Broncos. If they don't trade up for a quarterback, I think they can certainly use a corner at that pick. I look at the Vikings and the Raiders. Again, I think they can be in the mix from a corner if they stick and pick and don't move up for a quarterback. So there are a couple of teams. In fact, I think there are a few teams that are probably going to try to trade up and get in front of the Jacksonville Jaguars at 17. So they got to be careful with that. Like, one that I've heard is potentially going to be really aggressive is the Philadelphia Eagles at 22. And you'd understand why, I think, right? Like, that implosion down the second half of the stretch last season was largely due to a secondary that couldn't cover. And it's an old secondary, right? Guys like James Bradbury, Darius Slay, you know, Kevin Byard's no longer there, but he was a disaster for them. Their best football might be behind them. Howie Roseman's an aggressive general manager. He has been since he's been there. You'll remember the draft day trade for A.J. Brown, drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round wasn't a super popular decision at the time. He's going to get aggressive when he wants to. So that's a team that I've earmarked as one that could trade up for a corner, again, in front of Jacksonville. Another one I'd watch would be Arizona. I think at 27, their second first-round pick. You know, in that first round, they're either going receiver, they're trading. Even if they trade down, they're probably still going a receiver with their first pick there at number four. But I look at 27, they've got a huge hole at corner. They've got seven top 100 picks, essentially, as things stand. And they could get more of them, right, if they trade down from four. So that's a team at 27 I think could come up for a corner. So I think at least one of those guys will be off the board by the time Jacksonville comes on the clock. Again, assuming they don't get aggressive and trade up. But the, you know, the idea that both of them might be there, I think you could pretty much say is non-existent.
Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Who do you have ranked higher, Arnold or Mitchell? What I've heard, Justin, is in Ryan Nielsen's scheme, the new Jaguar defensive coordinator, Mitchell may be a better fit, even though I would think a majority of people probably have Arnold slightly better. What's your thought?
I do have Arnold as my number one ranked corner in this class. Now, it's extremely close for me. I love both of them, don't get me wrong. And I've spoken to both of them throughout this process, had some really good interviews with them over on the Draft Network. But Arnold, for me, is the most technically advanced corner in this class. That's what sets him apart for me. I mean, you look at the build, you look at the athletic testing, it's not really going to blow you away, right? Quinion Mitchell is more of a get-off-the-bus type of guy where you love the size and you love the athleticism. I just think Terrion Arnold's been battle-tested there in the SEC. He's one of the most technically advanced, technically savvy corner prospects I've watched over the last few years. And don't get me wrong, he's a good athlete. He does a great job thinking his hips, changing direction. He's always in phase within the hip pocket of his opponents because he does such a good job reading where the route and where the ball's going to go. So he's really good, you know, diagnosing those route concepts. So I'm a big fan of his, but I do understand the potential assessment that Quinion Mitchell might be a better fit in Ryan Nielsen's scheme. I mean, you look at the type of corners he's coached in the past, guys like Marshawn Lattimore, guys like A.J. Terrell this past season. He seems to have a preference for big physical corners that can play press man coverage, right? Get their hands on you at the line. I think that's more Quinion Mitchell in terms of that physical presence that's going to jam receivers right off the snap. I don't think that's as much Terrion Arnold's game, although I think he's versatile enough to play both man and zone. But I think I could understand why a guy like Nielsen might prefer a Quinion Mitchell.
Justin Mello of the Draft Network. All right, Justin, if both guys are gone, then we get into the Cooper DeJeans, right, the Nate Wiggins, the Kool-Aid McKinstrys. If Jacksonville still wants to go corner, do any of those three warrant a 17th selection on Thursday night?
I think it'd be a little early for any of them, but if they were to look at one of them, I think what we just talked about with Coach Nielsen, I think Kool-Aid McKinstry would fit the bill, right? Like, he's the biggest, most physical press man corner, I think, in this class. And it's very obvious, right? Like, that's the kind of system you want to put him in, is that Ryan Nielsen system where you want him to be able to trust his sort of speed and athleticism and size to play press man at the line of scrimmage. So if they're hell-bent on going corner and those two are not there, I mean, maybe you look at trading down. I think there are a few teams that could try to trade up for, like, an O-lineman if there's going to be a run, another run right around there, the Cowboys, the Packers, you know, maybe the Seahawks, the Steelers. Those might be teams right behind Jacksonville that would consider trading up. So if they want to, you know, they're hell-bent on going corner, they want to pick up some picks, they can probably go back to 22, 23, 24, 25 and still get one of those three corners we just mentioned.
Now, all the talk about wide receiver, if not corner, and at wide receiver, we know Harrison Jr., Neighbors, Odunze, all those guys are going to be well gone by the time 17 rolls around. At 17, we've heard forever, Brian Thomas out of LSU, A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. It appears, Justin, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that in the last couple of days, it looks like Brian Thomas has maybe separated himself from A.D. Mitchell a little bit, and Thomas is clearly the fourth wide receiver in this draft. Do you agree with that? And if so, how would Brian Thomas fit into Jacksonville's plans at 17?
Well, I like both of them throughout this entire process. In fact, if you look at recent mock drafts as well, you know, plugged-in analysts around the league, it seems like both of them are sliding a little bit. I don't know that either of them are going as highly as originally believed. I will say I like both of them the entire way. They're similar to the sense where they're both big, physical, vertical playmakers. They're both like 6'2", 205, and they both run like 4'3", 4'3", 4'3", 4'3", 4'3", 4'3". At least that's what they did at the combine. I do think Brian Thomas has probably separated himself a bit because I think he's a bit more of an explosive vertical playmaker. So teams that crave those explosive plays down the field are probably going to have a higher grade on him. And as I always say, explosive passing plays are all the rage, right, in today's pass-happy league. I do think where there's a difference, I think Thomas Jr. is a bit better vertically than Mitchell. I think he does a better job sort of using his size and separating on you know, those go balls. Whereas I think A.D. Mitchell is a bit more better in terms of changing direction, sinking his hips, running in breaker, you know, in outbreakers, things of that nature. I think Mitchell's better at right now, whereas Thomas, I think, still a little raw there. They didn't ask him to run the full route tree at LSU. So it depends on the type you're looking for. But in my opinion, Jacksonville should be infatuated with both of them.
If Quinyon Mitchell and Brian Thomas are both there at 17, this is what I've been told. Corner is not as deep as wide receiver. So probably go corner in the first round because you can maybe get a better wide receiver at 48 than you can a corner. Do you agree with that assessment?
I absolutely agree with that assessment. And I think when you put it that way, when you put it, you know, Quinyon Mitchell versus Brian Thomas, number one, you can argue that corner is a bigger need for Jacksonville. Number two, I think you'd almost get a league-wide consensus agreement that Quinyon Mitchell is a better player, a better prospect than Brian Thomas Jr. And number three, wide receiver is absolutely deeper in this class than cornerback, right? So when you look at all three of those things, it all leans in the same direction, right? It all roads lead to Quinyon Mitchell at number 17 over a wide receiver.
Couple of more for Justin Mello of the Draft Network. All right, Justin, if it's not corner and if it's not wide receiver, drafts are supposed to be a 10-year process, not a one-year process. The Jaguars right now have three solid offensive tackles on their roster, Cam Robinson, Anton Harrison, and Walker Little. Cam Robinson and Walker Little are set to become free agents after the 24 season. It's a very deep offensive line class. At 17, what are the odds Jacksonville may want to draft a guy, stash him away on the bench for a year, and then ultimately take over for Cam Robinson, say, in 2025? Who are some of the guys at 17 at offensive tackle that are likely to still be on the board?
Well, if I was Trent Baalke, I think if I was looking at that situation, I'd be intrigued by a guy that's versatile, that I can play in year one on the interior and then can move out to the left and replace, you know, a Cam Robinson in year two. The one that jumps out at me as fitting that bill is Troy Fatanu, the offensive tackle out of Washington, right? There's been some whispers, some chatter that he might play guard at the next level. You know what this situation reminds me a lot of? You look at the Dallas Cowboys last year. Say what you want. Everyone likes to clown on them. You know, a perennial playoff team for the most part. A contender, a well-run organization. I don't care what you say. That's a well-run team that's in contention every single year. A lot of teams would switch places with them. They did something similar, right, where they drafted a utility lineman in the first round last year in Tyler Smith. Well, they had a great veteran left tackle in Tyrone Smith, right? So what did they do? They played Tyler Smith at left guard in year one. And now that the eight-time Pro Bowler is no longer the left tackle signed with the Jets in free agency, they're moving Tyler Smith to left tackle this year. That's the plan in Dallas from what it appears to be. So I look at a guy like Troy Fatanu. I see a similar path because I don't know that Balky's in a position in truth to just stash a guy for a year, right? I think the stink of this past season for Jacksonville is still lingering, right? Missing the playoffs. What a disappointment that was. So they come back and do that again. I don't know that he's the GM in 2025, right? So I don't know that he's got enough job security to think, hey, I can just stash a guy that's not going to give me an immediate contribution because I'll still be here in 2025 to reap the benefits. But when I look at a guy like Troy Fatanu, what I say is, hey, you know what? I can kill two birds with one stone. I can play him at one of the guard positions this year if I want to, or he's great depth at all four of those positions, right? The chances of you getting through a season with a healthy left tackle, a healthy right tackle, a healthy left guard, and a healthy right guard is extremely minimal, right? So even if I like what I have starting on the interior right now, I say, hey, this kid's going to probably play a lot of football for us at some point this year as great depth, and then he could kick out to left tackle and replace the guy that's going in free agency. Or if I don't like what I have on the interior, he's going to come in, contend for a starting job, probably start for us at, say, you know, one of those guard spots. And then next year, we'll kick him out to tackle. So Troy Fatanu is a guy that would make a lot of sense where you'd address an eventual long-term need, but you'd still get great value out of in 2024.
No, that's a good point. It's great stuff, Justin. As we begin to wrap up, my caveat that I mentioned at the top, I think the three positions of need are corner, wide receiver, offensive tackle. But to me, if Jared Verse falls to 17, I'm sprinting to the podium. Now, I don't believe he's going to be there. I'm curious your thoughts on that, but the idea of Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse on that Jaguar defensive line, knowing what they have in Ryan Nielsen as a DC, to me might be too good to pass up. It might be best available over biggest need. What's your thought on Verse, and do you believe he might be there at 17?
Well, it would definitely be a luxury pick, right? Because you mentioned some of the other positions they have holes at. So it depends on what their motto is essentially going into the draft. I like Jared Verse. I think he's a twitchy, explosive, you know, first step pass rusher. I'm a fan. I do think there's a decent chance he'll be there at 17. In fact, when I've been putting the final touches on my mock draft, the two spots I keep looking at for him are the Los Angeles Rams at 19 and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 27. If he gets that far, it's really hard to figure out in truth who's going to go first between him, even a guy like Trop Robinson out of Penn State, and Laiatu Latu out of UCLA. Like, those three edge rushers are all, you know, potential first-round picks. And I don't think we have a sense of definitiveness on the order that they're going to go in. We offensive players are going to fly off the board in this draft, okay? We might only get one. In fact, I feel good about saying we probably only get one defender drafted in the top 10. And I think that's either going to be Dallas Turner, the edge rusher out of Alabama, or Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle out of Texas. So once only one of them go in the top 10, the one that didn't is probably going to be the next defensive player chosen. So all of a sudden, you're Jacksonville at 17. I think there's a really good chance that all three of those pass rushers that I mentioned are going to be on the board. So in truth, I think there's a great chance that Jared Verse is available to Jacksonville there at number 17.
Boy, that would be a hard choice if I were Trent Baalke, because that idea of Verse on that D-line would be too enticing for me to pass up. Justin, as we say goodbye, give me a surprise on Thursday night. Give me somebody that's going to go way earlier than expected, or somebody that's going to plummet that's not expected.
Well, Byron Murphy, as I said, I think got a great chance to go top 10. I look at the Atlanta Falcons at 8, the Chicago Bears at 9. It wouldn't surprise me if one of them took the first defender off the board and if they targeted a dominant 3 tech like Byron Murphy. The pick that I keep having fun with in my mock, and it's probably going to not end up coming true. We know how these things go. But the one that I keep thinking about is Washington offensive tackle Roger Rosengarten to the San Francisco 49ers at number 31 overall. I think that's a lot earlier than anyone expects them to go. But I look at San Francisco, that offense, you know, that's a complete unit, right? Very little holes on that team, on that roster. I look at the right tackle spot. It's a hole, right? They didn't really properly replace Mike McGlinchey last offseason. It was a bit of a sore spot for them throughout the summer. You know the system, Kyle, or throughout the season, excuse me. You know the system Kyle Shanahan loves to run, that zone-based, you know, wide zone-based system. It covets athletic offensive linemen, right? Roger Rosengarten ran a 4.92 at the NFL Combine. He was the fastest offensive lineman in Indianapolis that, you know, participating in the 40. So I look at him, I look at his athletic makeup, and I think of him as a perfect fit in like a wide zone scheme. I look at that hole San Francisco has at 31. That's a marriage that I keep coming to in my mock draft.
Justin, absolutely great stuff. Tell the good folks here in Jacksonville about the Draft Network and the coverage you guys are going to have beginning on Thursday.
Well, find us on Twitter at thedraftnetwork.com. The team will be live from Detroit executing all of our assignments. I'm on Twitter at JustinM_NFL. I just put a bow on my 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Interview Series. I am thrilled to say we interviewed 205 prospects in this class. Over the last few months, I have sat down with 205 different players, many of which are going in the first round, many of which are going in the top set. I'll probably have half of the top 75 as exclusive interviews on the Draft Network. You'll want to read those when your favorite team drafts them, because we don't ask basic questions. We talk about scheme fit. We talk about the systems they're familiar. If it's an old lineman, I'm asking, are you running zone? You running gap power? What was your favorite play to run in the playbook this year? If it's a corner like Quinion Mitchell, who I did interview, we're talking, you prefer press man or zone coverage? What type of defense do you want to play at the next level? That's the whole point behind this interview series. As soon as these players get drafted and we know where they're going, fans will tend to flock to these interviews to learn about them, to see what kind of system they like playing in, and trying to marry that to the team that drafted them. So the interview series will do really, really well this weekend. It's done well all fall and winter long. And I'll be tweeting out these interviews as the players get drafted. Say, hey, Jags fans, you want to know more about Quinion Mitchell? Come read all the incredible exclusive quotes he gave me about the type of style of defense he prefers to play in. So find me on Twitter all weekend long at JustinM_NFL, sharing those interviews with those players for your favorite teams.
Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Justin, I know you're very busy. Thank you for the time. Let's do it again post-draft. We'll see where the dust has settled and how the Jaguars come out during these 3 days up there in Detroit. As always, thank you, my friend.
You know where to find me. Thanks for having me on, Ryan.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
10 minutes before the 9 o'clock hour. We'll take you up till 10 o'clock tonight, as we do every night, right here on Hacker After Dark, 1010XL 92.5 FM. Figure you guys already know this by now, but in the event that you do not, we're streaming every single night on numerous platforms, right? From YouTube to Facebook to Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. And if you miss any of the Hacker After Darks during the evening, you can wake up the next morning and just watch them on Facebook, 1010XL, on YouTube, 1010XL, or on Twitter/X. I usually retweet it on my social media platforms. You can also simply find it by searching 1010XL on all those social media platforms. The NBA playoffs going on right now. Game 2, Western Conference first round. Phoenix up 51-47 on Minnesota. About a minute to go until halftime. Of course, Minnesota leads that series 1-0. Game 2, Eastern Conference first round. Milwaukee and Indiana. The Bucks an early 19-13 lead on the Pacers. Bucks lead that series 1-0. Keep in mind, home teams in the NBA playoffs are 11-0 so far. 11-0 home teams in the NBA playoffs through 11 games. Later on tonight, 10 o'clock tip on TNT, Dallas and the Clippers. Clippers lead that series 1-0. Last night, the NBA was nuts. Unfortunately, my Orlando Magic just, couple more games and their season will be over. It'll be disappointing. It's hard to be upset because they won 47 games and made the playoffs, which is all I asked them to do. I said, get me into the playoffs. They got me into the playoffs. So I can't be that guy who's upset now when they already met my goal. for the team, but they have not looked good in their first two games. Maybe a change of scenery in Orlando beginning Thursday night for game three will help. But those other two games were classics. I mean, the Knicks down 5 with 30 seconds to go, hit a couple of threes. Philadelphia inexcusably blows a 5-point lead with under 30 seconds left. Knicks win it in the Garden to go up 2-0 on Philly. And then the Lakers and Nuggets was just sensational. Now, many of you probably didn't see it because it didn't end till like 12:30 in the morning.
Me.
Yeah, exactly. But what a hell of a game. I mean, Jamal Murray with a buzzer beater 15-footer to give Denver a 101-99 victory over Anthony Davis. Just a great game, man. Great game. Love the NBA playoffs. They're really heating up, but that's an anomaly. I mean, when's the last time through 11 playoff games the home team has won every one of them? Goes to show you, I guess, how much better the top seeds are than the bottom seeds. Because I can assure you, when these bottom seeds get home games here in the next couple of days, they're not going to win those games. It's not just merely home court advantage. It's seeds 1 through 4 are just that much better than seeds 5 through 8 this year in the NBA playoffs. So a lot of fun on that front. Obviously, the NBA playoffs will continue. The NHL playoffs won't give you too much information other than some scores. Quickly, the Rangers up on the Capitals 4-2. And in the Battle of Florida, it is the Lightning and the Panthers game 2 in the first round. The Panthers were up 2-0 early. The Lightning have come back with 2 goals in the second. That is now 2-2 with 12 minutes to go in the second period. Back into the National Football League in one moment. I was interested today watching some of the Pat McAfee program. Peter Schrager of NFL Network was on there. And he said, look, there are going to be a lot of quarterbacks being taken early on in round number 1, which piqued my interest because every time a quarterback goes off the board on Thursday night, one would think that would help Jacksonville, as Jacksonville, who does not need a quarterback, would have players fall the more quarterbacks that go in front of them. Look, we know Caleb Williams is going to go. We know Jaden Daniels is going to go. We know Drake May is going to go. There's a very good shot J.J. McCarthy's going to go. So that's 4 quarterbacks in the top 16. But the way Peter Schrager was talking today with Pat McAfee, he thinks it's a very realistic possibility that Michael Penix and Bo Nix go in the top 16. And if that's the case, and you have 5 or even 6 quarterbacks go before Jacksonville, well, then at that point, Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, or Jared Verse are almost a lock. One of those guys is getting to you at 17. One of them will be there. Because if 6 quarterbacks go, you know at minimum the 3 wide receivers will go. That's 9. You know at minimum the 3 offensive tackles will go. That's 12. You would think Brock Bowers would go. That's 13. And then the Jaguars are just 4 picks away after that. And that still includes a lot of really good players like Dallas Turner, like Byron Murphy. So you want to see quarterbacks get drafted on Thursday night. The more quarterbacks, the better, because that means those guys the Jaguars have been talking about, we have been talking about for the last 2-3 months, will fall to you at pick 17. Quarterbacks are a good thing on Thursday night, and you want to see as many of them go as possible. We are at halftime here on Hacker After Dark. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Coming up at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, my buddy Brent Beard, we'll do a little recap of the Florida State spring game on Saturday. Did you see college football has now adopted the 2-minute warning? Yeah, following the NFL, there will be a 2-minute warning in the second quarter and a 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter now in the world of college football. We'll discuss that, but primarily, a lot of SEC guys are going to go on Thursday night, including a couple from Brent's alma mater, the University of Alabama. He watched every game of Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry. I'm going to ask him about both guys and how they would fit here in Jacksonville That comes up at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up next, Jamal St. Cyr, my pal from Channel 4. Let's talk Jags. Let's talk draft. And let's talk maybe a surprise or two. Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 next on a Tuesday night edition of Hacker After Dark here in the city of Jacksonville. We're glad you're with us on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. NFL Draft Week has arrived Thursday night up in Detroit. The Jaguars have the 17th pick in round number one. 8 picks in all, including 1 first, 1 second, 1 third, and remember 2 fourth round picks, the way it all stands right now. With that, let's preview the Jaguars and the draft with my buddy Jamal St. Cyr. You see him on Channel 4, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Jamal, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. Draft week is like one of my favorite weeks of the year, Hacker. I love the lead up to the draft, but like maybe the week before, I start getting a little antsy. Like, I'm like, let's just go ahead and get this thing over with. So I'm excited for this week. Love the uncertainty of it. Love the, you know, the excitement each fan base gets, because obviously the next rookie their team picks is always the next superstar in the league, right? So I'm excited. This is always fun.
No, I love it as well. 3 days, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday. I will watch every pick. I'm one of those guys that will literally be there until Mr. Irrelevant is selected on Saturday afternoon. Nope. Jamal, last
Hacker,
week.
Go ahead. Were you one of the guys that loved the 2 days? Because I loved 2 days before it got to three.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I did not like three at first, but it's kind of grown on me. I always liked the Saturday at noon all day and then Sunday rounds 4 through 7. But I really like Thursday, Friday, Saturday now. It's grown on me over the years. And last week, look, Trent Baalke held his press conference before the draft along with Doug Peterson. I'll give Baalke credit. He is forthcoming with information, maybe more so than some GMs have been here in the past, certainly. What did you take away from either Baalke or Peterson and their thoughts last Thursday?
I took away that they're probably going to err on the side of need. I know he talked about a little bit of, you know, how he views the board. If it's a really good player, talent will win out. But if it's a tie between players on the board, they'll go need. So I kind of take that as they're probably going to try and address some of the positions of need left on that roster early on in this draft, just because I'm sure the board's going to end up falling that way. I don't expect the big jump up trade that I know a lot of people were rooting for. It just sounded like he wasn't feeling it, said the analytics are against making those big trades. It's better to keep as many swings at the bat as possible. So if there's a trade, I would say it's probably a small hop up, maybe a couple of picks from 17 to maybe 14 to go secure a guy. But even a trade back, probably a little bit more likely. Sounded like he liked the cornerback class. He did, and he did also mention the depth in the cornerback class. So maybe cornerback isn't a he might not feel like he has to get it in the first round and still be able to get a guy who can come in and contribute on the team early.
Jamal, you know this roster as well as anybody, man. You're at that press conference setting all year, every time they hold one. So you look at the three DBs on the top of the depth chart compared to the three wide receivers right now at the top of the depth chart. It looks like Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage versus Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, Zay Jones. Where is there a bigger need? Where would you go in round number one?
Look, I don't think there's any argument around the fact that corner's the bigger need. Like, they like Ronald Darby and probably are okay if they start the season with him as a starter. But, A, you have zero depth behind him. Like, Darnell Savage is a safety by trade. They're going to play him in that nickel slot defender role. But if Darby goes down, you're looking at Montarq Brown, who probably isn't the right profile for a man coverage corner that they're looking for. You're looking for at a Greg Jr., who really hasn't been able to turn it on consistently at an NFL level. Christian Braswell, who really I don't think the Jaguars have any idea what they have since he wasn't healthy last season. There's no depth at corner if Darby goes down. So ideal world, you get a corner that comes in at 17 and at least pushes Darby for that starting job. If he wins it, great, and then Darby's your third corner on the boundary, which is a perfect world. Or at the very least, if something happens to Tyson or Darby, now you got this rookie that was at least competing, you feel pretty good about that, can come in and step in. I don't see a world where if they draft Adonai Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr., that they just completely usurp Zay Jones. I just don't see it. Unless they get one of those top three guys, Rome Odunze, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, I don't think if they draft a rookie wide receiver at 17, it is a full-time starter.
Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4. Jamal, back to the DBs for a moment, because that's interesting what you said about wide receiver. Are you a Terrion Arnold guy or a Quinyon Mitchell guy? If I don't think both will be there, but let's play along here. If both are there and you have your choice, who do you take?
If I had to pick between the two, I prefer Quinyon Mitchell. He's just a little bit tougher. I love his ball skills. You can tell by the way he attacks the ball that he's a former wide receiver. I would prefer him if I was picking between the two of those. I don't think both of them will be on the board at 17. I think the Jaguars would have to move up to go get one if they were going to get one of those guys. But I really like the two guys that are behind that top group too. Nate Wiggins and Kool-Aid McKinstry, love both of them. Absolutely.
It's interesting because I've talked to a lot of people. So you would be okay with either Wiggins or McKinstry at 17?
I would be 100% okay. I think McKinstry represents a guy with a high floor. You know, at the worst in his career, if nothing else happens, he's Ronald Darby.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, no, I like that thought because I've heard varying opinions on that. Trade back to get McKinstry. Well, it takes two to tango, right? What if you can't trade back?
Yeah, it takes two to tango, and then if you trade back, obviously you're risking someone else taking your guy. Look, the Jaguars have a pressing need at corner. They have to secure a cornerback in this draft. One of the things that stuck out to me that Trent said was that if you looked at the cornerback rankings from team to team, you'd probably find 32 variations. So you don't know how all these other teams are going to have guys ranked, and the Jaguars are looking for a very specific kind of corner now. They're looking for corners with man coverage skills. Those guys do not grow on trees. And Kool-Aid is a guy who did it at a high level in the SEC in college football that you know what you're going to get. Nate Wiggins is a guy who did it at a high level in the ACC. The only knock on him is he's a little light, but he plays with an elite effort. I think both of those guys would represent day one starters for you and guys that you'd feel good about putting on the boundary for years to come. Look, I'm a Leiatu Latu guy. I've been saying draft the best player available the whole way through. But to me, it sounds like they understand they have needs and feel like they need to plug those holes. And I get it. So if you go and get – if that's their guy, if Ryan Nielsen says, look, I like Nate Wiggins, I like Kool-Aid, I say secure him at 17. Secure the bag.
Couple more for Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4. If it is wide receiver – and I tend to agree with you that it's leaning corner right now – but if it is wide receiver – Brian Thomas or A.D. Mitchell are the two names that we've heard the most at 17. Although it appears, Jamal, to me, there's a little separation now. Maybe Brian Thomas over A.D. Mitchell a tad heading into the draft. What's your thought on those two?
Look, I loved A.D. Mitchell before the 40-yard dash time when I thought I was going to be able to grab him in the second round. 17 for him might be a little rich for my blood. Brian Thomas is that – I mean, if Trent Baalke built a wide receiver in a lab, I almost feel like it would look like Brian Thomas Jr., like height, weight, speed, length. Like he is that first off the bus wide receiver guy because of the size and the speed he can run at. It's tough to think that that guy is not going to be a contributor at the NFL level in some capacity just because of how big and how fast he is. So I would probably lean toward Brian Thomas Jr. there in that role. I think I could see how he'd be able to contribute early on, but you also have to realize with a guy like that, he hasn't really scratched the surface of what he is going to be. He's still a heavy projection in the NFL, so Chad Hall would have a lot of work to do with that guy if he's going to reach his ceiling. And that's why I said earlier, I don't think there's a world where Brian Thomas Jr. just usurps Zay Jones. At best, it's a split, you know, platoon kind of deal where Brian Thomas would have some packages, but Zay would still have quite a few packages in that offense.
Jamal, the way I've ranked them is corner one, wide receiver two, offensive tackle three, and people say, well, wait a minute, they got Walker Little and Cam Robinson and Anton Harrison. Well, yeah, that's true in 2024. And then Cam Robinson's a free agent and Walker Little is a free agent. There is a realistic possibility that this time next year, if they don't take a tackle high in this draft, Anton Harrison is like your one tackle, and then you got problems. So you always got to look ahead. It's a deep tackle draft. It's a good tackle draft. What verbiage would you use? Shock, surprised, or no verbiage at all if they were to go offensive tackle at 17?
If over the course of the 3 days they don't walk out with at least two offensive linemen from this year's draft class, I don't know what they were doing. If they go offensive tackle at 17, I will not be shocked at all. I mean, I think there is a high probability that there is a very talented offensive lineman that slides down the board. Talisa Fuaga, Troy Fatanu, either one of them could be sitting there at 17, staring Trent Baalke in the face, saying, hey, I'm the best player on your board. What are you going to do? And look, I've made the argument about the contract situation. You don't even have to go that deep. Do you like Trevor Lawrence? Are you planning on giving him a big contract? The offensive line has not been good enough over the past couple of seasons for a quarterback to be consistently successful. Enough said, invest in it, build it out. I mean, the playoff season, according to the advanced analytics, that offensive line ranked 31st. They wore shirts about it in training camp. Last season, they'll say it was the injuries that were the problem, and they're clearly planning on running it back with the same offensive line. But if you watch the game, the offensive line, at the very least, was no better than it was the year before. And it's tough to say it was better than it was, even though the analytics say they were a little bit better. But that's still not good enough. Teams, like defensive guys, love to say football games, postseason games, playoff games are won in the trenches. That's literally what Josh Allen said on Twitter after the Diggs trade. Games are won in the trenches. Eric Armstead said, you want to know how you win postseason games? It's won in the trenches. Well, that goes on both sides of the ball. You got to invest in that offensive line. And I get it. Nobody's ever like buying the jersey of the offensive lineman and real excited and throwing parties in the streets when they go and get this offensive guard or offensive tackle. But you know what? When your quarterback's standing back there throwing touchdown passes with no pressure in his face, you learn to appreciate that guy.
Final moments with Jamal St. Cyr. I go back to last year. They weren't really excited. The fans weren't about Anton Harrison. He turned out to be a very good player, and I'm thrilled. Anton yep. Harrison's going to be here for the next 5-plus years, no question about it. Jamal, you mentioned Latu out of UCLA, and you and I think alike, although I'm a Jared Verse guy. Now, look, I don't expect Jared Verse or Latu to be there at 17. Maybe one of them will be, and then I think the Jaguars would have a very interesting decision. Because to me, edge rush is obviously not the biggest position of need. But if you tell me Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse on that D-line, man alive, that would be a very interesting conversation in the Jaguars draft war room on Thursday night if one or two of those edge guys are there.
Yeah, look, I'm a big Latu fan. I like Jared Verse. I think he has an elite mentality. But I just think Latu is going to be the best pass rusher of the group. And with the way the league's going, with C.J. Stroud in the division, I think you need to have as many guys that can get after the quarterback as possible. And to me, day one, I think that's what Latu Latu is. Now, one thing that Doug Peterson did float during that press conference was that their vision for what a defensive end in Ryan Nielsen's defense looks like is different than what it looked like in a Mike Caldwell defense, or at least what the edge players look like. So I wonder what that difference is from a build standpoint, if that is more of a Latu Latu, if that is more of a Dallas Turner, or if that is the Jared Verse kind of player. I guess we're going to find out as they start to bring in some of the guys and when we get to talk to Nielsen a little bit more over the course of the offseason and going into the season. But look, I'm with you. If the best player on the board is one of those edge players, which it very well could be, I'm not going to be mad about it. Look, you got to figure out a way to stop C.J. Stroud. I mean, enough said.
And that's just in the division. You think about the conference, all the quarterbacks in the AFC, you got to affect the opposing quarterback, and the Jaguars, outside of Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker, did not do very well at that last year. Jamal, as we wrap up, realistically, I mean, obviously Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison are not going to be there at 17, so take those guys out. But realistically, all the names we've talked about for the last 3 months, they're all in a hypothetical scenario there on Thursday night at 17. Your Brian Thomases, your Quinyon Mitchells, your Terrion Arnolds, your Latus, your Jared Verses, your tackles, all of them are there. Who is Jamal St. Cyr drafting at 17 if it were you?
If everybody's on the board, I think you have to run in the Quinyon Mitchell pick. I think you have to run it in. He's a guy who has all the athletic skills in the world. He has the toughness, the dog mentality you want at a corner, the chip on his shoulder. He's a Florida boy. He's from like 20 miles outside of Gainesville. He's been playing college football in Toledo. Bring the boy home back to Florida and lock up those corners for the next couple of years and get ready to play some defense. That's the last spot in this defense that really needs a big boost. Like, you can survive with your edge. You can survive with your defensive line group. And keep in mind, you can boost some of those guys with other picks of situational, rotational guys later in the draft. But corner's the one spot where you don't have a high-level developmental guy where you need some help. You need depth. You have to add it. And in a man coverage defense, there's no way around it. I mean, they're one injury away from looking at each other in those meeting rooms like, what are we doing?
It's a good point. Now, Monteric Brown stepped up on the Thursday night game against New Orleans last year, but the luster came off pretty quick in the weeks following. I agree. I don't like the fact that corner is probably where they're going to go, because I think either offensive tackle or wide receiver, you got to score points in this league. But I think it is such a pressing need that Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold would probably be the correct pick there at 17. Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4. Jamal, I imagine you guys will have a ton of coverage like we will all week. What's coming up there on Channel 4?
Oh, yeah, we're cranking it up. On draft day, we'll be live over at the draft party at Everbank Stadium. Our coverage is going to start at 7 o'clock over on Channel 4. Look, you can tune into national stuff, but you're not going to hear anything about the Jaguars. I am 100% an advocate. Support your local media folks, because they are going to cover your team the right way and tell you what you need to hear. Our draft coverage is going to start at 7 o'clock over on News for Jax.
Jamal, you're the man. I know you're busy this week. Thank you, as always. We'll talk after the draft, and we'll see where the dust is settled when it comes to the Jaguars draft picks. Appreciate you, my friend.
Hey, appreciate you having me on, Hacker. Anytime, man.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
All right, updating you on the playoffs, both in the NBA and the NHL. 4 minutes to go, third quarter, game two, Phoenix and Minnesota. Timberwolves up 66-63. They lead that series 1-0. Pacers up a bucket on Milwaukee, 40-38. Actually, check that. Milwaukee has just tied it at 40, 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. The Bucks lead that series 1-0. Mavericks and the Clippers, a 10 o'clock tip tonight on TNT. Clippers lead that series 1-0. In the NHL, the Rangers up at Madison Square Garden lead the Capitals 4-2. 12 minutes to go in the third period. Lightning and Panthers going on right now, and not to give a thorough breakdown of this game, but one of the best saves you might ever see in your life happened about 10 minutes ago. I'm not even going to pretend to know who this goalie is for the Florida Panthers, because I would be making that up and you would see right through me because you're an educated sports audience. But I'm going to call him 72. That's his jersey number. That's one of the best saves I've ever seen in my life. You'll see it all over the highlight reels, regardless who wins this game tonight. Now, it was a ridiculously lucky save. He wasn't even really looking. He was diving onto his back and just happened to get his arm in the way. But that was one of the craziest saves you'll ever see in an NHL game. Nevertheless, an NHL playoff game. But in the Battle of Florida, Panthers lead the series 1-0. Game tied 2-2 at the end of the second period, so it should be a good third period down there in South Florida. Coming up next, my buddy Brent Beard. A couple of the issues we're going to get into with Brent. Of course, you see Brent on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. The final spring game for the colleges that we cover took place last Saturday. Florida State had their spring showcase over there at the renovated or being renovated Doak Campbell Stadium. I mentioned this last week. I wonder how many Florida State fans actually know there's only going to be like 55,000 capacity this year for football because of the renovations going on over there. But we'll break down the Florida State spring game. We'll also talk about the rule changes coming to college football, including the two-minute warning that is now coming to college, just like it is in the NFL. And Brent's an SEC encyclopedia, man, including an alma mater of the University of Alabama. So we'll talk about the SEC guys being linked here to Jacksonville, including both of those corners, Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry, from over there in Tuscaloosa. So Brent Beard, coming up next. You see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. It is a Tuesday evening in the city of Jacksonville, less than 48 hours away from the NFL draft, and we're glad you're with us. Hacker After Dark rolls on till 10 o'clock right here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, it is a Tuesday evening, and we are glad you are with us. Boy, there is a ton going on. The NFL draft is less than 48 hours away up in Detroit. Certainly a lot of SEC guys will be taken on Thursday in round number one. We have a Florida State spring game to look back on and a couple of new rule changes that now align college football with the National Football League. Let's talk about all of it with my buddy Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News, and you get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Mr. Beard, how are you, my friend?
Well, I'm enjoying the last of the cool weather. That's been wonderful over the last few days. But the summer means that preseason magazines are on the way, which they will be in a little over a month, if you can believe that. We'll have high school football starting really quite soon, frankly, next week, I believe. So that'll be interesting, but kind of closing the door on the spring. And a little over this time next week, we'll be close to closing the portal again.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. You mentioned closing the spring. Florida State, the last school in our area, Brent, to have their spring game. They had the spring showcase over at Doak Campbell Stadium, a being renovated Doak Campbell Stadium. My understanding is this year they're only going to have about 55,000 seats or so. Great. As they're doing a big renovation over there in Tallahassee. What stood out to you from the Garnet and Gold game this past Saturday?
Yeah, the renovation limited a lot of things as far as the fans, and that's basically what they'll be limited to this coming season. But they will have a state-of-the-art stadium in 2025. They open the season next year with Alabama, so that should they should be having folks who are will be glad to come see the stadium and see some good competition. The spring game was interesting. I watched a decent amount of this, and some of it was scrimmage, some of it was situational stuff. So you had a little bit of everything. DJ Uiagalelei, 12 of 26 for 177. That will certainly have to improve in the fall, but I think given the circumstances, he did okay. Malik Benson, the Alabama transfer, had a good spring game. He got some credit for playing well, but I remember well in Alabama's last spring game, not this season, but last season, he was one of the stars of the spring game, and then and then a few months later, he's at Florida State. So take that what you will. And that, I think the running game is going to be good. Rodell Williams, another Bama transfer, got in. Lawrence Toafilla was impressive. So, look, they've got athletes. There's no doubt about that. But they do have some guys leaving. Their defensive back, Greedy Vance Jr., is going to USC. And then Vidarius Jacobs, their wide receiver, has entered the transfer portal too.
You know, it's interesting. Again, Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. You mentioned Alabama transfers. There's like five former Crimson Tide players from last year that are now on this Florida State roster. You don't see that very often. You know, you look at Florida State, Florida, Georgia, Miami, spring wrapped up. You know, all eyes now on summer conditioning and fall work. But college football made some pretty big news late last week, adopting two new rule changes, Brent. We talked about these, I believe, a month or so ago when they were on the table. You know, we're used to two-minute warnings in the NFL. Now two-minute warnings are coming to college football, both 2 minutes to go in the second quarter and 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and you will now be allowed to have coach-to-player headset transmission leading up to plays being cut off with 15 seconds to go on the play clock. Again, we know that college football is almost the minor leagues now for the NFL, and more of these rules now really signify that as a lot of these rules are being synced up.
Yeah, I like the headset communication. That just makes sense. They should have had this 10 years ago, frankly, and now we get rid of all the poster boards with
Jay Leno's face,
yeah,
and
yes,
Bugs
and
Bunny
characters, yeah, and stuff like that. So I don't think anyone would miss that. Now they do have to do something to help the receivers. I've been told by some coaches that people forget it's not just the quarterbacks, but the receivers have got to get some kind of a signal also. So that will be interesting, and they'll figure that out. Look, the two-minute warning is – I think what I don't like about the two-minute warning is just be transparent for what it is. It's just another timeout. The Rules Committee co-chair goes on to say, well, this is not new or an additional timeout. Quit trying to fool people. That's exactly what it is. And even if they don't cut away to a commercial, they will do something – even with shots on the field, over the ticker or something, that will be some advertising. So just basically call it what it is. But what I can see that would be an advantage is if for some odd reason you're a team that have used either all or all but one of your timeouts, having an extra timeout at that point, I could see where and they need to be honest about this, but that part of it would be advantageous probably for both teams.
Yeah, there's no question. It's the NFL model, obviously. And look, it is what it is. It is for advertising. I agree with you, but it will allow teams trailing to have a better chance, right? Because like you said, you basically have four timeouts now if you have all three in your pocket and the two-minute warning, so clock management issues will come into play just like it does in the NFL every Sunday. I like it. And Brent, again, you know, look, we talk about the rule changes, and I wouldn't be surprised if one day, you know, you had to have 2 feet in bounds in college like the NFL.
Yep.
The more time that goes by, the more they're syncing up the rules between the game we see on Sunday and the game we see on Saturday.
Well, and what also is going to go with this, and we'll certainly have a lot of time to get into this, is like the NFL, they're going to have contracts and they're going to have tiered payer payments. In other words, the quarterbacks get this and the offensive linemen get that. You're going to have revenue sharing. So on the field and off the field, right, Hack, it's going to get similar, much more similar over the next few years.
You see Brent Beard on First Coast News. You also get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. All right, Brent, you are a college football encyclopedia, and I'm curious, there's been a lot of names that have been thrown about regarding the Jaguars coming up to this draft up in Detroit Thursday, Friday, Saturday, a lot of names that have SEC ties. And let's begin, just a quick thought on each guy. We'll begin with a couple of players from your alma mater, Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry, the two corners from Alabama. Both have been linked to Jacksonville. Let's begin with Terrion Arnold. Who knows if he'll be there at 17? That's not really the question. But your overall thoughts on Arnold as a player and how his game will translate to the pros?
Very well. I mean, Arnold just – I remember Arnold basically saving the Texas A&M game a couple of years ago in Tuscaloosa. Do you remember that? They were throwing – based on the last play of the game, and he batted the pass away, and that is what the guy was special last year. I, I'm I'm not sure that at some point during last year, he may have been the best player on defense. Now, here's the thing with both he and McKinstry. Nick Saban coached the secondary. They may have had someone in name that coached them, but Saban coached the secondary. Here's the thing that he does is that they are so precise as far as your footwork and where to position yourself. You won't find a better coached players in the secondary than you will from Alabama. I mean, it just is amazing how good these guys are, particularly at the corner position. So, and now McKinstry actually can return kicks. They took him off that because he, frankly, fumbled some of them. But he is an incredible specimen, frankly. Both of them, if they get picks, they can take it to the house. So if either one of those guys are available, that would be a very wise choice.
The thought is Brent Arnold maybe a tad better than McKinstry. Would you agree with that?
Well, let's just say this. Maybe. But if you're a Jaguar fan, you can't go wrong with either one of them. I'll put it that way.
A couple of LSU wide receivers, Brent, are going to get drafted on Thursday night. Yes. Now, Malik Nabers is going to go way early. The Jaguars would have to trade up for him. But yes. Brian Thomas is a name you hear in Jacksonville an awful lot at pick 17. Your thoughts on the LSU wide receiver?
Well, two incredible wide receivers. I mean, obviously – you had the Heisman Trophy quarterback throwing the ball to them, but still, these guys, they've got vision, they've got footwork, they've got the ability to create space and get wide open. They catch the ball with their hands. I mean, whatever adjective you want to describe for receivers, that will be for both these guys. They're game breakers. And you're right, Thomas probably just hasn't got the publicity, but he is that good. And look, like an Alabama DB, I don't think you go wrong drafting an LSU wide receiver.
No, I agree. Obviously, with the track record recently, Jefferson, Chase among them, certainly. A.D. Mitchell is a guy that spent time at Georgia, Brent, and then he goes out to Texas. And look, A.D. Mitchell's a guy that's been linked here as well. Now, in the last couple of days, maybe that name is trailing off a bit. I think people have maybe some concerns about him. There's a couple of medical issues that are floating out there. It's rumor season, obviously. But A.D. Mitchell, likely to hear his name called at some point in round one. The sticking point with him that I've heard from scouts is why wasn't he more productive at Texas and even at Georgia in his early years? What's your thought on a player like A.D. Mitchell?
I can buy not being that productive at Georgia because you've got so many other receivers who are really that good, and you can get kind of caught up in the numbers. I mean, when Mitchell was at Georgia, I remember very well that he caught some passes over SEC cornerbacks and safeties that few people could catch. Game breaker, makes big plays. That's a guy that you bring him to the NFL, you take care of the medical stuff, and he's ready to play. Well worth the draft pick, yes.
Final moments with Brent Beard. You see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, the Jaguars, defensive back and wide receiver, clearly two of the biggest needs. Quickly to offensive tackle, a couple of SEC guys that have been linked to Jacksonville. Amarius Mims from Georgia, who is just a gigantic human being.
Yes.
And one guy you're very familiar with, and J.C. Latham from Alabama. A quick thought, again, not an X's and O's. I'm not expecting you to talk about footwork for both guys, but clearly both guys at 17 would probably be good picks for the Jaguars.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, you've got to protect your quarterback, and you've got to open up holes for the running game. I mean, you're right about that. Mims is so big that he may actually need to lose some weight, but I think he could do that, and he would be fine. I mean, Mims – Look, they've had arguably the best offensive line in the SEC, so you're not going wrong there. J.C. Latham was just a standout with Alabama. I mean, he did well in protecting the quarterback. I mean, there's really very – I mean, again – you're almost splitting hairs here to me. I mean, with either one of these guys would be a wise decision. And look, a lot of guys that you've just mentioned over the last 2 or 3 minutes, I mean, to get one or two of those guys will be it would bolster the draft significantly.
You know, and as we wrap up, those are the three positions of need, right? Corner, wide receiver, offensive tackle, in whatever order you want to put them in for the Jaguars. My one caveat this whole time has been this, and I didn't think this was possible 2 months ago, but as more of these mock drafts, Brent, come out, Jared Verse is in some of these mock drafts at 17.
Yeah.
And I understand Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen, and they sign Eric Armstead. But if you tell me at 17 on Thursday night, I can draft Jared Verse out of Florida State to put on that D-line next to Walker and next to Allen and next to Armstead, I got to tell you, Brent, that would be awful hard for me to pass up.
You really can't go wrong by bringing a disruptor, and that's what Verse is. If people want to have a fascinating study, they need to sit down and look at Verse's career and where he was and where he has come now and how good that he is. I mean, there have been times where Verse has been unblockable. Look, Hack, right now, besides having a quarterback and a game breaker at wide receiver, to me, the most valuable position in frankly, on all levels of college football, is a rush in pass rusher or a defensive tackle who can solidify your defensive line against the run and also get to the quarterback. Look, I'm with you. You can't have enough Jared Verses, can you, Ryan?
You cannot. There's no question about it. And, Brent, final question. You were a Heisman voter. Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy, obviously. Projected to be, at this point, it looks like the number two pick in the draft. Quite a rise from where he was at Arizona State to where he ended up at LSU. Do you buy the Jaden Daniels hype going into Thursday night?
Yeah, absolutely, every bit of it. I think he's that good. Now, he needs to get a little bit bigger, but as far as the intangibles and what he can do, it's unlimited with him. I could see him being a real star. I frankly would choose him over Caleb Williams, frankly. This is a good quarterback draft. And the other guy, and people are going to smirk at this a little bit, but you've got to take it for what it's worth and look at the whole picture. The other guy that I think is worth the top 10 pick is Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. I think Brock is that good when he's healthy. I think he can do anything. There were several games, literally, for Georgia he won. And I would say the Auburn game would be one of those. Look, I think Bowers could play – quarterback in an emergency. It's just a fabulous football player. And guys like him, yeah, I think you've got to look beyond the analytics to see what he could do as a leader and be able to get the ball down the field when you need it.
NFL draft Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Jaguars currently have 8 picks, including the number 17 selection in round number 1. You see Brent Beard on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, appreciate your time. We'll be back next week to recap the draft. Certainly some stories in college football will develop. And I want to get into next week. Todd Golden cleaning up again in the transfer portal for Gator basketball. He's got it rolling down there. Thank you, Brent.
I'm not sure right now that Florida basketball is not more exciting than Florida football in the minds of the fans. And, Hank, as I leave you, thanks again for the opportunity. We have draft special First Coast News at 7 on ABC. Thursday night. Excited to be a part of that. Invite folks to watch.
Perfect. Yeah, Thursday night, 7 o'clock on ABC 25?
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brent. We'll talk next week, my friend.
Good. Look forward to it, bud. Take care.
And thank you to my buddy Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. College football, spring football in the rearview mirror. The rule changes, including adding the two-minute warning to the college football game in the second quarter and the fourth quarter, just like they do in the National Football League. And, of course, the NFL draft is all the SEC prospects that will be drafted on Thursday night in round number one. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy Tuesday night here on Hacker After Dark, as they're going to be pretty much every night the rest of the week. Now, schedule's a little different this week. We're back on Hacker After Dark tomorrow from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. On Thursday, I'll be sitting in with Hayes Carline on the Frangie Show as Frank gets ready for the NFL draft broadcast from the stadium. So Hayes Carline and myself on Thursday leading up to the draft from 4 o'clock until 6 o'clock. And then we're right back here on Friday. I'll have head coach Dave Campo in studio with me here on Hacker After Dark as rounds 2 and rounds 3 of the NFL draft are ongoing Friday evening up in Detroit. Got a lot of people to thank for tonight's broadcast. Again, Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. Thank you to my buddy Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 for previewing the Jaguar draft with us tonight. And back in hour number one, Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Justin does a great job. One of my favorites to talk draft, and we did a lot with Justin Mello. If you missed that conversation, I think you'll really enjoy it. TheDraftNetwork.com. We will be back tomorrow night on NFL Draft Eve on a Wednesday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Tuesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Tuesday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Wednesday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.